more jazz coming up in just a minute.
I'm in. Down these stairs and along this corridor, and then I've got to turn right. It's a very busy house, and there are a lot of people here. But I'm not at my destination yet.
This Christmas, Radio 3's Sean Rafferty visits some of the UK's leading musicians in their most creative environments.
This is a very, very musical house.
Their own homes.
Another corridor. You're probably wondering where I'm going.
Julian Bream, John Elliott Gardner, Mitsuko Uchida, James Galway, Thomas Allen, Cleo Lane, Antonio Pappano, Neville Mariner.
I can tell you, it will be worth the wait.
Weekdays throughout the holiday period from 4:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And now Jazz Lineup, presented this week by Julian Joseph.
Hello. On today's programme, two contrasting concert sets. Coming up later on the show, a very special performance from saxophone giant Wayne Shorter, recorded at this year's EFG London Jazz Festival with the BBC Concert Orchestra. Wayne Shorter with the BBC Concert Orchestra, and more from that set later on the show. Also coming up, a concert set given by British jazz great Stan Tracy, who passed away earlier this month on December the 6th, just short of his 87th birthday. Stan was a pianist and composer of the highest order. He wrote and recorded numerous works for a wide variety of settings that included his big band, octet, quartet and trio. Born in 1926, he stands amongst the giants who define the jazz scene in this country, which include John Dankworth, Ronnie Scott, Joe Harriet, and Humphrey Littleton. Stan worked with musicians of all ages, giving opportunities to many generations of burgeoning young musicians. I'll be joined by his close friend and long-term collaborator, saxophonist Bobby Wellens, shortly. But first up, let's hear some glorious music they made together in 1967. Recorded 2 years after Stan's seminal recording of the jazz suite Under Milk Wood with his quartet featuring Bobby, this is the opening track from With Love from Jazz and Stan's composition Two-Part Intention. Thank you. pianist Stan Tracy and two-part intention from the 1967 album With Love From Jazz, featuring our special guest Bobby Wellens on tenor saxophone, a longtime friend and collaborator of the great pianist and composer who passed away earlier this month. A terrible tragedy for the British music scene and the world of jazz, and Bobby Wellens very graciously joins me to remember his friend and legendary musical figure. Bobby Wellens, condolences to you and all the Tracy family on behalf of Jazz Lineup.
Thank you.
We're going to hear a special concert set featuring Stan and his octet soon, but before that, what are your memories of working with the great man?
Well, the memories are pure joy. Musically, yeah. Absolute joy. And he never failed to make me think at times when he was playing, I thought, oh, that is absolutely wonderful. How did he think of that? You know, he had a great mind musically. Mm. His whole heart was in his music, as we know.
Yes,
absolutely. And his orchestrations and his compositions, everything had to be 100%. There was no leeway at all, had to be of the highest standard. And that was it right through to the last time he played.
When did you guys first meet?
I think in the early 60s, when I was invited to join Tony Crombie's Jazz Inc.
Right.
I'd never met Stan. I'd known him by reputation. And I was both excited and nervous for the rehearsals coming up with a small band. Mm. As soon as we played and the rehearsals, I suddenly thought, this is fantastic. This guy is just absolutely wonderful. But as an accompanist, when I was soloing, it was just so unselfish. The contribution was absolutely to you in every way. Mm. And I thought, this is unbelievable. He actually opened doors, I think, and helped to influence and inspire me. Never stopped, really, over the years.
In your conversations with him, how would you say he came about approaching playing and composing the way he did?
Well, the strangest thing is that we never discussed our musical rapport.
Yeah.
It was never came under discussion at all. Yeah. It was just accepted. Mm. But if I did ever ask questions, for instance, I wish I'd have pursued it more now, but when I was asking him about orchestration, we were talking about he said, well, I only see things in shapes. Mm-hmm. Well, I presume from a piano player's point of view, he was talking about shapes with their two hands, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or whatever. You would know more about that than
sure.
I do.
Yeah, voicings.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As regards, because he was an accordionist originally.
Of course.
And he'd only had a couple of lessons, and the switch to piano, I never ever asked him how he done that. Mm. It does sound completely silly, but I only got on with what we did.
Right, right.
I never asked him much about himself or his background or what he'd done and et cetera, et cetera. He did over the years tell me he used to walk from the West End to Tooting with his accordion after gigs,
right.
which was quite a feat in those days. He actually got picked up by a police car and taken home one night. They felt sorry for him.
Well, you know, one of the great things about Stan was he was always down to earth. He had a great sense of humour and he had a great sense of sort of being both serious and yet delivering jokes completely deadpan.
Yes. Oh, his wit was it was a dry wit.
Yes.
But it was always to the point. The one-liners were unbelievable. I mean, over the years, and even when I'm... Because socially, we never mixed much together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we had to, really. But I'll sit there and be in the middle of a dreamy muse and I'll burst out laughing at some scene that suddenly came to mind when we were together.
Yeah.
And he said something. They always had a great comment, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know the one about they call me the godfather of British jazz.
Yeah.
He said, well, you know what that feels like? I said, no. He said, like the captain of the Titanic. The ship's going down, but the band's still playing. I mean...
See?
Yeah. This is Stan.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Well, one of the things I just wanted to ask you about is, what would you say Stan's legacy is?
His legacy is... highest possible order of playing, and you can't let go of that. It mustn't flag. Mm-hmm. It was 100% every time.
Right.
Everything was for music. He couldn't wait to get on and play.
Right.
He was just loved it. He mm-hmm. just loved playing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think apart from his excruciating pain, I think his worst pain was he couldn't play anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think that must have been so frustrating for him.
Yeah.
Because he was still playing great.
Well, also, another part of his magnificent legacy, not only musically, but personally, is his son, Clark.
Oh, Clark is another mega talent, you know. Absolutely. Apart from being a brilliant percussionist, Clark is another arranger and composer. He's inherited a great deal from his father, a great deal indeed. He and I have been quite heartbroken about the whole thing. Mm. This is the first time I've managed to pull myself together, so to speak, sure. to be honest. I mean,
how would you like people to remember Stan, and in what way would you like them to remember him?
I think it would be nice if we were all remembered his dedication to the music and his love, his absolute passion for the music itself. It would be nice for him to remembered just for that alone, and to remember that he was one of the great players and orchestrators and composers of our time.
Well, thank you so much, Bobby Wellens. Your remembrances of Stan, I think, will inform and enlighten many people as to the passing of a great man.
Oh, thank you, Julian. I do hope so.
Well, we're about to hear concert set highlights recorded at the 2008 London Jazz Festival at the Claw Ballroom of the South Bank Centre, and originally broadcast on the 11th of January in 2009. This feature stands octet in the company of Andy Kleindert on bass, Clark Tracy on drums, Mark Armstrong on trumpet, Mark Bassey on the trombone. Sammy Main, Sammy Allen and Mornington Lockett are on saxophones, with Stan Tracy on the piano. They open with a piece by Stan, which he dedicated to American tenor saxophonist Sonny Rollins. This is Nuke's Fluke.
Thank you. This next piece is called Rocky Mount.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this final piece is called The Cuban Connection.
Thank you.
The Cuban Connection from the Stan Tracy Octet, recorded at the Claw Ballroom on the 21st of November at the 2008 London Jazz Festival. Andy Kleinder was on bass, Clark Tracy drums, Mark Armstrong on the trumpet, Mark Bassey on the trombone, Sammy Main, Sammy Allen and Mornington Lockett were on saxophones, and the late Stan Tracy was on piano. For all the titles played, check out the playlist on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Vocalist Gregory Porter has had a very good 2013 with his first release for major label Blue Note called Liquid Spirit. This is the title track.
Unreroute the rivers, let the damned water beat. There's some people down the way that's thirsty, so let the liquid spirit free. The people are thirsty because of man's unnatural hand. Watch what happens when the people catch wind, when the water hits the banks of that hard, dry land. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Get ready for the wave. It might strike like a final flood. The people haven't drank in so long, the water won't even make mud. After it comes, it might come with a steady flow. Grab the roots of the tree down by the river. Dip your cup when your spirit's low. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Dip down and take a drink and fill your water tank. Dip down and take a drink and fill your water tank. The rivers, let the damned water beat. There's some people down the way that's thirsty. Let the liquid spirit free. The folk are thirsty because of man's unnatural hand. Watch what happens when the people catch wind of the water hidden banks of hard, dry land. Clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now.
Vocalist of the moment, Gregory Porter, and a strong flavour of rhythm and blues with his gospel-infused liquid spirit. 2013 has been a year where jazz has been devastated by the loss of many major pianists. In addition to the recent passing of Stan Tracy, we've lost Cedar Walton, George Duke, Mulgrew Miller, and British-born Marion McPartland. Marion had a long-running radio show on National Public Radio in the US that featured many of the most important jazz pianists over four decades. A feature of the show is that, as an accomplished jazz pianist herself, she duets with her guests and asks them insightful questions about their art and playing the piano. Some of these recordings are on general release, so from her show featuring pianist Bill Evans in 1978, here are the two of them playing In Your Own Sweet Way.
Thank you.
a festival of great pianistic contributors. The Dave Brubeck Classic, In Your Own Sweet Way, from the album Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz with Bill Evans, out on the Jazz Alliance label, as we remember a year where so many prominent jazz pianists passed away. Well, we now turn to the music of a man who's always contemporary and absolutely timeless. Jazz Lineup were privileged to record the magnificent saxophonist and composer Wayne Shorter on the closing night of this year's London Jazz Festival at the Barbican Theatre. The programme featured Wayne in two different settings. The first part with his quartet, with Danilo Perez on piano, John Patitucci on the bass, and Brian Blade on drums. And that set you'll be able to hear on Jazz on 3 this coming Monday on the 30th of December. And the second part paired his excellent quartet with the BBC Concert Orchestra conducted by Clark Rundell. And the set opens with Wayne Shorter's Prometheus Unbound. And listen out for musical quotes and fragments from some of the classic Wayne Shorter compositions. Wayne Shorter and the Three Marias, ending our highlights from his concert set at the Barbican in London as part of this year's London Jazz Festival. Danilo Perez was on piano, John Patitucci on bass, Brian Blade on the drums, the BBC Concert Orchestra conducted by Clark Rundell, and Wayne Shorter on tenor and soprano saxophones. For more information on Wayne Shorter and for all the titles played, check out the playlist, plus links on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's almost the end of this week's show and our last show of 2013. But plenty more jazz on Radio 3. Tonight on Jeffrey Smith's Jazz, a look back at highlights from 2013, including numbers from John Coltrane, Bud Powell, Joe Venuti, and Eddie Lang. And on Monday nights with Jez Nelson at 11, check out more music from Wayne Shorter, recorded at this year's London Jazz Festival. Our first edition of Jazz Lineup for 2014 will feature a performance from pianist Carla Bley, recorded at this year's London Jazz Festival, featuring saxophonist Andy Shepherd and bassist Steve Swallow. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
This week's Jazz Lineup, the programme was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. And as Julian was saying, for more information on Jazz Lineup, just go to the programme page via the Radio 3 website. Jazz Lineup will be back next Saturday evening here on BBC Radio 3 at the same time, 6 o'clock.
We need villains in plays, films and television drama. There's no plot without them. But what do they tell us and where do they come from?
I find a theme of such unbelievable horror. I suddenly think, that's in me? I would never do that. You know, the things you suppress in yourself are there.
Alan Ayckbourn, who joins Judy Dench, Ian McKellen, Richard Eyre, Anthony Scher, Maxine Peake and a host of others to shed light on the way we need villains to show us ourselves, with Anna Maxwell-Martin coming from the rehearsal room to share thoughts about the terrifying Regan in King Lear. Join me, Paul Allen, for the fun and the horror of villains in this week's Sunday feature, starting at 6:45.
And that's here on BBC Radio 3. Well, back to this Saturday evening. It's 28 minutes to 8. And now opera on 3. As we draw to the end of the Benjamin Britten centenary year, here's a recording made at Glyndebourne in October. It's presented by Louise Fryer.
Benjamin Britten's opera The Rape of Lucretia was premiered here at Glyndebourne in 1946 with Kathleen Ferrier in the title role. This evening we're back for the first revival here since that time. Claudia Huckle as Lucretia and Duncan Rock, the wicked Tarquinius. Nicholas Collin conducts the Glyndebourne Tour Orchestra, led by Richard Malone, in what the Daily Telegraph has described as a nakedly powerful new production directed by Fiona Shaw. The Independent also gave it a 5-star review. As you'll see from the photos on the Opera on 3 page of the Radio 3 website, Fiona Shaw combines two parallel timescales. The main characters are from ancient Rome, and the male and female chorus who interpret the pagan tale for Christian ears come from the 1940s. Britten created this chamber opera to a libretto by Ronald Duncan in the aftermath of the Second World War. He'd visited the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp the year before, his discomfort underpinning the disquieting music, the brutality of the story, and the austerity of the forces required to play it, just 13 players and 8 singers. And that very much underlies Fiona Shaw's thinking.
I was very moved that in this very place that we're in, Glyndebourne, it was done in 1946 and made here. And when they were rehearsing the opera here, they had to measure the soap that the cast used to make sure that no more than a certain amount of inches was used per night. So it was built on rationing, with that sombre hangover of the war. And so I have allowed my chorus to be two people who are sort of also hangovers from the war. It's a young couple who clearly haven't been getting on due to probably somebody's affair. And as they stumble into the story, he starts to dig it out of his mind in a way. He starts to dig it up. It's like digging up a body or digging up a garden. He starts to dig it. And as he starts to dig down, they both sort of fall into the story of the Rape of Lucretia. They begin to tell it in a way to cleanse themselves. And I think the parallel between the public morality and catastrophe of the war, the kind of rape of Europe that was just across the sea, the fact that the bombers used to come over this very garden, you know, on their way to London, the kind of incomprehensibility of it, the terror in the night, which you have a bit of in Lucretia with knocks on the door, is something that, you know, is not that hard to access when you go via 1946.
The production is designed by Michael Levine. The stage is covered with crumbs of black earth several inches deep, and there's plenty to be uncovered. In other productions, the male and female